Welcome to Pleb Chain Radio, a live show brought to you by Plebs for Plebs, which focuses on the intersection of Nostr and Bitcoin protocols. Join QW and Avi as they run down the weekly news and developments, breaking down the current thing and the future frontier with the foundation of decentralization, the builders, thinkers, doers, and plebs. All right, we are live.
Welcome, gentle plebs, to episode number 91 of Pleb Chain Radio. Today is Friday, the 13th of December, and it is 6:01 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States at the time of recording. Folks, it is the most wonderful time of year. It's NGU season. And to celebrate, we have friend of the show and dear friend in general, Maiku Tsukai, aka Bitcoin Shooter, the director of the hot new movie No More Inflation, joining us to talk about that, returning to Pleb Chain Radio to talk about that and much, much more. And a reminder, folks, if you are listening to the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, first of all, thank you for listening. But I would urge you to hit pause and switch over to the Fountain podcasting app, where you can earn some sats and support the value for value revolution as you listen. The show is recorded live on Nostrness and streamed live on Zap.stream and any other Nostr client that supports streaming, such as Amethyst, Nostr, etc., and so on. And for our meme readout, QW, it is the clown face progression meme. And this one's actually in, you might remember the traditional clown face progression meme being a four-frame meme, but I have a fifth one, an extra one.
Perfect.
We'll start with the first frame, with where our hero is diligently putting on the very first layer of clown face makeup, the face paint. And the caption is, "There is no inflation." In the second frame, we have the red lips, some decoration around the eyes being applied. And the caption is, "Inflation is transitory." The third one, third frame, we have our hero getting the multicolored, the rainbow colored wig, clown wig being put on his head. And the caption says, "Actually, inflation is good." The fourth frame has the red nose on, the full clown costume ready, and the caption says, "Corporate greed caused inflation." And finally, for our bonus frame, QW, the one that usually doesn't exist on these memes, on this meme template, we have the entire clown posse, our hero and many other clowns, and the caption says, "Putin caused inflation." QW, you've been paying
the close entire attention. Clown posse, like insane clown posse,
insane clown posse.
I have.
You've been keeping an eye
on the culture, the culture's corner. Man, you know what? We've been talking about that fountain takeover, and we mentioned it started happening where an artist would take an hour, they'd create a playlist. But I actually did it yesterday. I actually went on to Fountain when that was happening. And it was for Man Like Quex, a friend of the show, straight pleb chain, our good buddy from Tanzania. He had a 1 hour takeover. It actually turned into about hour and a half, almost 2 hours. And it got to the point where Quex said that Oscar's trying to steal the aux cord back. It was pretty funny, but I experiencing that. So, you know, you go to the app, and you go to search, and you'll see right at the top there's the Fountain Radio that's always streaming 24/7. But during these hours, they're whoever the artist is, they do an hour takeover. And when you click on that, you go in, and there's a whole, it's like a whole chat, it's like a whole like forum going on. So live stream, live conversations. You can zap, and every single song, let's say Quex is playing an Ollie song, if you zap during that, it goes to the sats actually go to that artist, whoever it is that's playing on that playlist. So it's a really cool experience. So you get a little mix of the artist music, and then you get a mix of whoever, you know, whatever genre or something that that he wanted to add to it that maybe he enjoyed. It was a really fun experience.
QW, it's certainly fun experience, the Fountain Takeover. But I will say about Man Like Quex, the only Plebchain Radio guest in history who has scaled Mount Kilimanjaro, and certainly right. QW, the only PCR guest in history who scaled Mount Kilimanjaro and planted the Bitcoin flag there.
It wasn't just the Bitcoin flag. It was the Bitcoin plus Noster. It was the full Plebchain flag. Yeah, absolutely. He climbed Mount Kili and planted the flag, kind of like the Ohio State Michigan game the other day. But anyways, I know most of our guests aren't sports football fanatics like myself, Avi. Well, I don't want to assume, but I know you aren't. You're the other kind of football.
The other kind of football, indeed.
So just to add to that, because I think it was a really fun experience, and I'm starting to see these features that are actually polished and are fun to be a part of, really community-based. Today was Abel James, so he's going to be the Fountain Radio Takeover. And tomorrow, FM Radio. So that'd be a Sunday would be Ainsley Costello, and Monday is Suzanne Santo. And what they're doing is they're kind of, it's all the artists that are rolling into that Sats by Southwest that Open Mic was discussing with us last episode. So it's cool to see that kind of cultural momentum building together, using Noster as the communication protocol and Bitcoin as the monetary value for value side. So pretty exciting stuff, Avi.
Love it, QW. And it seems to be getting better every week. There's something
Dude,
new.
It's like it's ready for normies.
Almost.
Yeah. Almost. Well, that's you know that's just our bias.
But
I
you know,
sometimes.
You know what normies really like though, KW.
Lambos, they like storytelling. Oh, storytelling. Okay.
They like storytelling, which brings us to our sermon today. Storytelling. So we are in NGU season, QW, as I'm sure I haven't hesitated in reminding. But what one of the things that happens in NGU season is you get a lot of NGU tourists. And the question is, how long do these tourists stay, right? And I think what really keeps tourists and converts them into productive members of the revolution, like you and I, QW, certainly like myself anyway, is storytelling. It's because what storytelling does is it humanizes this what can be an incredibly complex technology, at least at first blush, right? Not everyone is ready to hear about the mechanics of difficulty-adjusted proof of work or the dynamics of a perfectly inelastic supply like Bitcoin has, right? These can be off-putting topics. If you're just curious, you've heard about Bitcoin because everyone's talking about it, the price is over 100K. So a lot of these folks, many of them, are not going to be swayed to stay by intellectual arguments. They need to feel something, right? They need to feel something about this revolution, not think it. And that's where storytelling comes in. And something like filmmaking especially, right? It allows the creator, the filmmaker, to use regular people and tell the story that we want to tell, right, through their characters, through those regular people's characters. And that can have a really broad appeal. And KW, that's how I think we win this adoption battle. Storytellers, whether it's through film, music, books, or art, working hand in hand with devs and educators, right, converting the NGU tourists into sticky members of the revolution.
Yeah, I agree. You know, but and storytelling must cater to a crowd, meaning one must understand the audience to thread the needle or delivery. Every story has a reader or a listener. You know, on an individual level, it's kind of the same way. I got an exciting text today, Avi. It's a meet this dude I get steaks from. He texted me today and he said, "Hey, we need to talk about Bitcoin." And that was my face just smiled because I'm like, dude, I'm so happy. I'm because I am that lighthouse that we discuss within my group or friends or network. So it's kind of like, okay, well, he wants to talk about Bitcoin, but he's a meat dealer. So I need to understand my listener or my reader and spin this story. So, you know, first thing I start to look at is the beef initiative. I start looking at how, you know, Texas Slim is looking at the beef side of things as a decentralized network, and all these individual meat dealers or farmers become nodes within this network. And those are the kind of things, that's the way you can relate Bitcoin to the individual person. Granted, a lot of storytelling is brushed with a broad stroke, but for me, I find the most effective, especially, is when they're ready. And that's a text like that is like, okay, he's ready. Let's do this. But you know, the more knowledge, let's say the more podcasts we listen to, Avi, the more we understand how many use cases there are within Bitcoin in the community, the culture, to where if certain people from different walks of life comes in and says, "Hey, you know, tell me about Bitcoin." The first thing I think of it, well, who's this person? What kind of pains or what kind of adoption are they looking for? What use case can apply to them where I can craft this story or thread this needle to a perfect execution of orange pilling versus a 15-minute or you know, a 1-minute elevator pitch and their eyes glaze over. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that you got to meet them where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And understand who they are, but also understand Bitcoin. Study Bitcoin, study Noster. All these things affect everyone differently. So, you know, let's say you live in Iran. Let's say you live in US. Obviously, we're going to have different approaches with why Bitcoin's most important or why Noster's most important. So understanding the audience or listener and just the art of storytelling, Avi. And you are so eloquent at it.
Well, I'll tell you, who's really eloquent at it, and we have a living example of his work, is our guest, Bitcoin Shooter. Welcome to Plebchain Radio again.
Hey guys, yeah, happy to be back, especially back and after you know, completing the film. So I'm much more at peace, and yeah, man, really happy to be here with you guys.
We got to start again, a Shooter, with a burning question. Is Maiku Sukai the alter ego who kicks chairs?
Who does what?
Maiku Sukai?
Yeah, what does he do?
Do you remember when you were here, I think in April, when you were on the show, you were talking about kicking chairs as a mechanism?
Now I remember.
So is, yes, Maiku Sukai that alter ego who kicks chairs?
Yeah. He barely remembers us, Avi. Come on.
I know. I think
it was important to Avi.
I think I'm just much more at peace and calm now, you know, and I think even the kicking chairs stuff was more about when I was first getting into Bitcoin and understanding it. But I think, I think Maiku Sukai is the opposite of that. I think he is the... You know, he's attained Zen and enlightenment, and he is perfectly calm.
the flow state, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, people know me as Bitcoin Shooter, but again, I made this film not just for Bitcoiners, but for normies, and so, you know, I wanted a more, you know, a name that I could promote that wouldn't be, you know, Bitcoin related, because I figured, you know, I might lose people right off the bat if the director's name is Bitcoin Shooter, you know, so that was the real reasoning.
So what was the inspiration behind the name? Maikusukai.
Right. So, you know, it was like Japanese name. Maiku is how you would spell or pronounce Mike in Japanese using their alphabet. And then Sukai actually means angel. So it's like basically like Japanese Michelangelo is essentially what it is. So yeah, when I was, you know, going through the thick of the film, I was spending a lot of time, you know, learning about Michelangelo and his processes just to try to, you know, draw some inspiration from another artist who has worked on projects. Yeah, that's the gist of it. So that's really the inspiration of it. You know, Japanese name like Satoshi Nakamoto, and then Michelangelo as, you know, just another great artist that, you know, would dedicate years of his life to making a piece of art. And so, yeah, that's really where the name came from.
That low time preference, proof of work.
Absolutely.
So what have you been up to since April, man? I think you were here late April, about 34, for us, 34 episodes ago, which probably means 34 weeks ago. What have you been up to since then?
Yeah, so after that, I visited a few more locations to pick up some final interviews. You know, I was sharing the rough cuts of the film with, you know, friends and other quote-unquote advisors. And really, most of the time was just spent editing, you know, sitting on a chair and ironing out the film and getting it to flow in the way that it does now. So it's been a lot of editing. It's also been a lot of, like, you know, brainstorming around different ways to promote the film. But yeah, most of it so far has been editing, you know, until I finished the film about 3 weeks ago and published it. And now, you know, more time is being spent to promoting it and awareness and, yeah, getting some more eyeballs on the thing. But probably like 90% of the time from then to now, from April to now, was all just editing, man. Like, it was kind of intense, actually.
How hard is it to craft the flow when you have that much hours of, you know, put into the actual recording, interviews, all the videography side?
Yeah, so it's kind of like, it's hard to know exactly how much time it's going to take, because it's kind of like writing, I would imagine, where, you know, sometimes you're really flowing and you're knocking pages out and you're, you know, happy with them. And then sometimes, you know, you get stuck on something and you're wrestling with it for a while, sometimes days, you know. And so, yeah, at least I knew what I wanted to cover and I knew the general flow of the film, like the logical thing to start with and the questions that would stem off of that and kind of that nice flow to go through. And then of course it's a lot of watching it over again, seeing if there's any, you know, it's really like a lot of trimming, you know, seeing if there's anything in there that could be trimmed out and the piece would still be intact. You know, figuring out where to have music, where to not have music, how long to have music, the tone of the music. So that's really like my style, is I feel like if the music's good, it'll keep people engaged. And if I cut out all of the redundancy, you know, then there's quality information being communicated throughout the whole film. So with those two things, you can kind of stay engaged. You never feel like, okay, I get it, like go on to the next point, or, you know, like feeling kind of bored. The music kind of keeps you in there. So, I mean, I think it's kind of like sculpting a statue. You know, the work, the things I record kind of dictate the pace and, like, you know, the process of it actually all coming together. It's like, I may envision a certain thing, but at the end of the day, I have to also work with my content that I've captured and kind of meet in the middle somewhere. So it's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of topics covered in the film, and that was probably one of the most difficult things, was keeping it organized in my mind of what I need to grab, what I have grabbed, you know, what people are in this, at this conference or in this place that I'm visiting now that could potentially fill some of the messages that I need to grab. You know, I think that was probably the hardest thing with, you know, covering so many topics, was just keeping it organized in my mind. You know what I mean?
You know, one really tough needle to thread is the story of inflation and then all the other things that Bitcoin enables, like censorship, resistance, you know, you had the Canadian trucker bit in there. There was a COVID segment. So I think it is a very tricky thing to do, right? Balancing all of those and have one cohesive narrative around that. How did you find that challenging to keep that inflation story going? Because that's what this movie is at its core, right? It's about inflation, but also you want, as a Bitcoiner, you want to show all these other amazing things that Bitcoin is capable of.
Yeah. So the way I really saw it was that, if you mention Bitcoin, you have to mention the things that people, the preconceived notions that they have about it, right? Energy is bad for the earth. It's only used by criminals. It's too volatile to save in it. It's too complicated to use it. And so I think I knew inflation was going to be a great topic to go off of and to start the film with, because it's a perfect segue into Bitcoin. When you communicate to somebody that, hey, it's really, this is only happening because money is being printed. And what if there was a money that couldn't be printed? I think that's like the absolute best way to go to start getting into Bitcoin. And so in my mind, the transition from inflation to Bitcoin was the hardest part, because, you know, no matter what, there's going to be a certain group of people that you lose the moment you mention Bitcoin. You know, there's nothing you can do about it, but there'll be people that will be willing to be won over if, you know, you can make that transition as smooth as possible. And then what I really did was, instead of focusing on, hey, I want to show the world like all the great things that Bitcoin is doing, the thought was more like, you know, I want to take some of the common objections that people have about Bitcoin, and then I want to share stories that contradict those thoughts, you know? So I think the film was really, again, like the questions that the narrator, myself, you know, asks, happen in a logical form, right? It's like, okay, wait, so you just explained all these problems about inflation. I get it. That makes sense. I'm totally behind that. But Bitcoin's the solution. Like, isn't that like really hard to use? Like, who the hell is even using it, right? And then you see a story of somebody using it in El Salvador. You see a story of somebody using it to buy a very expensive Voss, and, you know, their ACH wire transfer won't go through, right? And then that leads to the next question of, you know, like, it's able to go through because there's no central body. These miners are, you know, hashing and processing these transactions. But okay, well, I know miners use a lot of energy. Isn't that bad? You know, and so the whole progression in the Bitcoin half of the film is like that. It's like, okay, wow, I didn't know about that. But what about this thing that I know is bad? Oh, wow. Okay, it's for criminals. Oh, okay. But, you know, what if the government says you're a criminal and you're in Canada and you're just a trucker? Like, you know, oh, okay. So, you know, it's not just criminals using this. It's activists that are using this too. So that was really my approach, was to take those negative things, you know, and you know, iterate them like a normal person, like any normal person would ask about Bitcoin, and then just present, you know, stories that contradicted them. So that was the approach.
So what changed, Shooter, between the Madeira screening? So when you were on the show in April, it was shortly after you'd done an early preview. It was I think half an hour, maybe 40 minute cut of the movie, which you showed at a theater in Madeira as part of Bitcoin Atlantis, or a satellite event, I should say. And then in the 6 months since then, or 5 or 6 months since then, to the release, right? Obviously, the movie is now a little longer. But if I remember that one screening correctly, then some things have changed, right? Some of the scenes have changed. Some of the conversations, you've moved around. What do you think you changed between then, the Madeira screening, and the actual release?
Right. So there was a good amount of interviews that hadn't been done at that time. So you didn't have Tour de Meester in there yet. You didn't have BTC Sessions. You didn't have Matt Hill. You didn't have Texas Slim, Rockstar Dev. There was a lot of additional interviews that were picked up. And, you know, some things that were in the screening in Madeira were removed completely. You know, some interviews are not there anymore at all. So, again, it was just along those lines of, like, sculpting a statue, you know, like... Once I collected more material and I had more material to work with, you kind of take a step back and look again and say, okay, well, what do I have here? You know, how does this flow best here? And so I think one of the major things that changed based on some feedback that I had gotten from Graham Hancock was the flow of the film in Madeira was inflation is, you know, difficult for me in the West. Why is this happening? And then it goes into money printing and the gold standard. And then the topic after that is, well, okay, well, if it doesn't stop, what happens next? And then you go into Jamaica and Argentina, but that kind of got flipped. Graham Hancock thought, you know, some of the most powerful interviews are these interviews in Jamaica and Argentina and Venezuela. So why don't you put those more up front? So instead of saying, you know, it's hard for me in the West, why is this happening? It's hard for me in the West, you know, if it doesn't stop, like what happens next, you know? And so anyway, things like that. But again, it's just a matter of once I actually had all the material, you know, you kind of reassess and you look at, okay, what do I got here? Are there better transitions I can have? Is there a better structure of flow? So it's hard to say exactly, but I'm sure, you know, a lot has changed since the screening in Madeira.
Well, actually, if you now that you mention it, right, if Tour de Mista and Matt Hill happen after Madeira, then that's a pretty significant change, because I think those two probably have the longest screen time, right, KW?
Yeah. And I thought Matt Hill crushed it too. He did a very, very effective, and you know, could have just been some amazing interviewing skills and editing skills, but very, very effective, you know. And I met him in real life, just a genuine guy, is from my understanding. Very, very, he's a teacher at heart, and he did a, you can tell the way he can explain things, the way he delivered his message, just a solid add to the film.
It's funny about Matt Hill, because he was like actually reluctant to do the interview. Like he was down to do it. And
he's
then,
a
like,
sovereign individual.
No, not like that. Not like that. He was like, he wasn't sure if he was the right guy to talk about the topic of war. The reason why I asked him to do it is because, you know, just him and I hanging out at different conferences and stuff, like he always starts talking about that. Like I knew it was something that he was passionate about and something he was knowledgeable about. And I'm like, I don't need some professor or some, you know, Ivy League school that studied war history to be the one that's talking about it. I just need somebody who's passionate about it and who's knowledgeable about it. And literally, like, on the way to, you know, the studio to film it in Denver, you know, he picked me up and he's like, you know, man, I almost called you to cancel it. You know, I'm just not, like, I didn't have time to think about it very much. I've been so busy, you know. And I'm like, dude, let's just do it. You know, it's going to be cool, man. I'm sure it's going to be great, you know? And yeah, anyway, I'm so glad that we did do it, because I agree just with you.
A gentle pleb. Well, yeah, and that whole aspect of, you know, inflation kind of touches everyone. Everyone thinks about the price of eggs, but no one thinks about the cost of war and how inflation's kind of ingrained or intertwined with that. I think for a lot of people, you know, maybe that'll be their first touch on, you know, how war is it thrives through inflation, and how Bitcoin can kind of be that extinguisher of that. I think just as many people hate the price of eggs as much as they hate the cost of war.
Yeah, no, I think it's an important connection for people to make that, like, yes, not only the cost of eggs and milk hurt your wallet, but it's also, you know, funding all this warfare. Like, that's why the price is going up. Like, you are paying for those tanks and those missiles and everything. And again, I think, yeah, kudos to Matt Hill, because he laid it out so perfectly, right? It's like, it's at the expense of every person, because every new dollar that's created for the sake of war causes inflation. And another great line he says is, like, you know, the U.S. military industrial complex cannot produce what it produces on an annual basis without printing money. So yeah, I think these are important connections for
smaller bombs, right? I think he said
smaller bombs. Yeah,
be a lot less destruction with cheaper bombs. So how many people, individuals did you actually interview in total?
Probably like 80, and then 44 in the film.
Wow, and some are in the film twice. Isn't that right, Avi?
I think a lot of he circles back to well, Joe DeMeester and Matt Hill are in the movie several times.
I know, and Rockstar a couple times. There was one, I think, rising star actress that might be a breakout actress in 2025. You might know her well, Avi.
I do know her well.
That's why I had her in the film. You know, I just wanted to make sure I got on Pleb Chain Radio. So, you know, I need to make sure I got her in there.
Wait, for folks who are confused, my wife, Monica Burra, is she's a psychotherapist, and Shooter interviewed her in Riga in, when was it, Shooter? 2023? Seems like an eternity ago.
must have been like August or September, or I forget what
month August it was. August of 23. It was still warm in Riga.
Was great, because I full disclosure, I watched the movie last night with my wife, and I was like, oh my god, there's Avi's wife. So it's kind of like a girl connection type of thing. They've never met each other, but you know, it's kind of a proof of wife type of thing, because my wife's met Avi. By the way, my wife is one of those types that one of her greatest superpowers is just completely blunt honesty. It could be like brute force honesty. I always ask her, you know, anything, and she'll just give you the honest opinion. And it sometimes you're like, damn, okay. But I did ask her how she liked the film, and she loved it. So this is coming from someone that doesn't necessarily understand Bitcoin. But 100%, I think what you're trying to do is speak to those people about inflation, but then kind of weave in the Bitcoin. She loved the stranded mining, the flare mining, and then the how you can bring power to desolate places. And I think one part of the movie, was it 8 million people or 7 million people? Can now kind of have access, potentially have access to power based off of this the decentralized mining.
Yeah, right. So that was a power producer. The company name is Hydrobox. The CEO is Thomas Pullmans.
And was that the one that was talking?
Yeah, exactly.
Right when he said that, you can kind of see in his eyes the emotion of how powerful he felt of what he just said.
Right. Yeah. We were kind of crunching the numbers there on the interview, but his whole thing is like, as a power producer, it's very hard for him to get funding, because these places where there's good rivers or, you know, whatever for generating power, there's literally no infrastructure whatsoever there. The people that live there are like literally living in the Stone Age, right? Like they don't have power whatsoever. So the problem is, it's expensive to build out these power plants. And if you don't have the demand there of a city to actually use the power, there's no way of making the money back. So you can't actually get the money you need to build these things out. But now with Bitcoin mining, as long as you can have a container or two, you know, come out with you the moment you have the infrastructure set up, you actually can be profitable. So what he was saying is, you know, they have like dozens, like 50 or 60 or 70 sites that would be viable, but they just didn't have enough of initial demand. And now they do have that. And so they were planning on only, you know, deploying maybe 10 or 20 megawatts in the next 5 years. And now he thinks they can, you know, maybe even do up to like 300. And so, yeah, if they were able to deploy that much, then, yeah, like I think 7 or 8 or 9 million people could be reached. And so the film's great, too, because you hear from a couple of those locals, you know, farmers that got energy for the first time and how much it's changed their lives. And so then if you think about that and you multiply it by 7 million, it's like, wow, it's really incredible. So I understand why the wives like it. And actually, it's so funny, man. Like, I think that is probably the most common thing I've heard about the film is the wives love it. Like, I don't know if it's because maybe they're more into storytelling or they're more into like the emotional connection that you get when you see people in the film. But like, overwhelmingly, that is the most common thing that I have heard from people. Like, yeah, it was great. I loved it. But, you know, more surprisingly, like my wife loved it, you know, and she likes Bitcoin only because I like Bitcoin, but she's not really that into it. But they were actually really into it and it helped connect some dots. And so, yeah, I think that's a good sign. I think, you know, that's what I kind of set out to do. And so I feel good about it.
Avi, just let me cap that. I think for someone like myself, I wait for opportunities like this in films like this to say, hey, you want to sit down and watch this? It's an hour long. It's like, sure, whatever. She and you know, it's instead of me telling her, like, and just her eyes glazing over, it's a beautiful portrayal. And like Avi says, that storytelling is the ultimate orange pill.
And just to round out this conversation about wives, Shooter, I know you'd sent us the link 2 months ago to watch the movie, and we only ended up watching it 2 or 3 days ago. And that's because Monica was refusing to see herself on screen. She said, no, I don't want to see myself. I don't want to see my... And
Matt Hill has not watched it either yet. So
all through the last month, she'd been getting pinged by other Bitcoiner wives, you know, friends we've made over the last few years, saying, "Hey, did you see your in Shooter's film? Have you seen it?" And finally, I said, I think a couple of days back, I said, "Honey, I have to watch this. He's going to be on the show. Like, what am I? I'm going to pretend that." But by the way, he collects emails, so he probably knows if I've seen it or not.
And anyway. I mean, we just had someone ask. I'm lost a little bit. What film are you talking about? What we were talking about, and I believe we might have mentioned this, but Bitcoin Shooter's new film, No More Inflation, and that's nomoreinflation.com, right?
That's right. Yep. So you can get it there.
So how many countries did you visit?
I think I keep losing track. I have a list of it somewhere, but I think it was like 8 or 9. You know, some of them I went there specifically for stories that were there. Some of them I went there to pursue, you know, raising funds. Some of them, you know, for different reasons. But I think, yeah, it was probably like 8 or 9, and then, you know, like a half a dozen states in the U.S. too. So it was pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Which was your favorite country to visit, Shooter?
Man, it's tough to say. I loved Jamaica. Jamaica was really nice and beautiful, and the people there were very like warm and friendly. And Kenya obviously was awesome, you know, just meeting those people and seeing how their lives changed. And I went on safari out there too after I had filmed with Eric Herzman, the CEO of Gridless. That was really cool. El Salvador is always really nice to visit. North Dakota was crazy, you know, to see the boys out there mining on flare gas, and just the work ethic that, you know, those oil field workers have is like really inspiring. But yeah, Kenya always comes to top of mind, and Jamaica, Argentina was really nice, but it just feels like not real. Like, you know, in Buenos Aires, it's really nice, but outside of Buenos Aires, you really get a real sense of, you know, how difficult life is there. And even in Buenos Aires, like the people who work and on a dollar salary, they live great, and the people who work on pesos, like, you know, they're just, life's getting harder and harder. I think those are the kind of ones that always come to top of mind.
And was the your Argentina visit, was that pre-Milei?
Yeah, exactly, it was pre-Milei. Yeah, yep.
It will be interesting, Shooter, if you do if you ever decide to do a follow-up on some of these places to see how Argentina has evolved in the post Javier Milei era.
Yeah, exactly. I've been in touch with some of the people that I interviewed out there. And so they're saying that, like, you know, they're cautiously optimistic. Seems like things are, you know, kind of getting a little more stable. But yeah, we'll see. You know, when you have so many subsidies, you know, I know Milei is talking about cutting all of these different departments and everything, but, you know, people were being subsidized for food, and, you know, some cities, 80 or 85% of the people work for the government. So, you know, I think people are maybe a little skeptical on how smooth you can transition away from that. But yeah, time will tell. We'll see. I hope that things get better over there, you know, because, you know, lots of lovely people out there. I'm just, man, living with, like, you know, triple digit inflation's insane. Like, one lady showed me her app that she has, like, this peso bank account app, and she was like getting paid like 85% interest, you know, but she still was getting screwed, right? Because like the actual inflation was like 120%, right? But it was just nuts to see things like that. It's pretty crazy.
Well, we're seeing like banks offering money market 5% or whatever. And it, historically, that sounds great, but it's not anymore. We can kind of see us ticking up the same way. just not as exponential. I was laughing because the Economist magazine, I think it was a week or two ago, they had one come out when it was Malay's black and white face, and it says, "My contempt for the state is infinite. And I just thought that was such an interesting cover, and kind of it's like, how do you have a leader like that who takes on that much inflation, that many government workers, that many subsidies, and you know, your contempt for the state is infinite. It's just going to be interesting. I think that's a huge kind of case study in the future of what can you actually do if you take an extreme approach with an economic, basically an economics teacher taking over.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see what happens in the U.S. too, right? Because, I mean, mm-hmm. obviously Trump ran on inflation, and I mean, you have to, right? Because that's like one of the most common things that people are worried about. But he's, and now if you look at him in different interviews, when he's kind of getting pressed on, like, can you promise people, you're going to, bring prices down? He's like, well, I can't promise that, but, we're going to do the best that we can. And so, yeah, right. We'll see what happens, but,
I'm putting more in your pocket approach than I'm bringing the prices down. I think either way, it's just, they're both running away. Yeah,
but how can he bring price? I'm just
right.
I don't.
Tariffs. Right? I mean, tariffs. I'm kidding. Right. That
yes.
And they're all just different taxes.
Yeah, in America, right? Like lots of people are already struggling going month to month. So I think that the time for Bitcoin is really like the timing is just getting better and better because if people are hoping that Trump is going to fix this inflation problem. And then he doesn't, and then it's like, well, what are you going to do now? And so, yeah, I don't see how he's going to bring prices never come down. Even if he kind of kept them the same, like I think even the prices as they are now are not sustainable for most people. So it's coming to a head. And, Trump is the guy. He's not a politician, supposedly. And, if anybody can fix it, it's going to be him. And so if he can't, him and Elon can't, then I think people are going to have to really start asking themselves some hard questions. Like, what are we going to do? How are we going to deal with this inflation?
One area of inflation that's recently come into the limelight a little bit, I wouldn't call this a viral story necessarily, but is streaming service prices. Right. So YouTube streaming, there's Sling TV, Fubo TV, and some of these other ones, Hulu and others, right? They were offered once upon a time as an alternative to cord cutters, right? The guys were going off cable and switching to these online streaming services. And they started off, I remember Sling TV, I don't know if you're familiar with that one, Shooter, but maybe 7-8 years ago, I used to have a subscription. It was like $20 a month. And then I switched over to another one called Fubo, which is around $25. And back then, YouTube introduced their streaming and a couple of others came around. And they were all in the $20, $30 range, right? And you'd get your standard channels, which you'd get on cable. You'd get some sports channels to watch. Now, all of them, it's the same bundles, right? Largely the same bundles, maybe some other garbage channels which no one watches thrown in. They're all around $100 a month, these streaming packages. It is remarkable how much those prices have inflated. And I don't know if it's price gouging on the part of those providers because it's becoming cheaper to create content, right? The technology is improving. And it's largely the same content packages.
A lot of reruns on those channels too.
Right. So what exactly is causing this 5x increase in prices?
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. I mean, I look at like most sets of Hollywood or like some of these movies and I mean, so many people are on set too though, right? So, I mean, yeah, maybe... equipment has gotten less expensive, but like price of human resources must be going up because people need more money to live. So Maybe that's what it is, you know, and it's kind of crazy.
You got to feed the set, Avi. It's food inflation.
Dude, but like some, you'll see so many people on set, right? There's like, I mean, there's like a whole truck full of just wardrobe and there's like four people. There's like the main wardrobe person and their assistant and the assistant of the assistant. It's like just so many people, which is kind of crazy, right? Because like, I mean, I made this film essentially on my own with, you know, a couple of suitcases and a backpack, but that's the only reason that I can think of is just their overhead is so expensive for producing this, like in terms of people, you know, producing this stuff, however many people work in the offices, like whatever, they're just so big and massive. And yeah, I don't know. I wonder like how high on people's priority it is to have, you know, that kind of entertainment, you know, like when are they really going to cut off that service? You know, when will it become too much, you know? So I don't know, man. Everything's getting so expensive, though. Like it's kind of insane. So, yeah, I think
find
it's a good
it
thing
hilarious.
For Bitcoin.
We're kind of snapping back to antennas. Like I watch some shows just on antenna, just because it's there and it's free. You know, I wouldn't even mind having a DVD player at this point for some of this stuff because DVDs are so cheap. They'd be cheaper than trying to rent a movie via digitally. So it's just it's gotten, we've kind of lost the plot with the whole digital age, and then don't get me started about trying to sign in and remember passwords, and you know, my mother-in-law's watching, so I got kicked off type of thing on a Netflix. So not only Avi, like you were saying, the price is going up, but they're also restricting how many watchers, how many viewers at the same time. So it's like they're whittling away.
Shrinkflation.
Yeah.
It's right. And Netflix now has ads, which is, so what exactly am I paying for right now?
we're in the death spiral at this point.
I will gladly go back to the video store, the cassette tape days, bring those back. Those I have such fond memories of just going into one of those CD joints on a street corner, thumbing through like, you know, a couple of hundred.
It's the proof of work. It's the emotional attachment. It's the which one are we going to pick tonight, honey? You know, or date night, whatever it is. It's something where you develop this emotional attachment before you even watch it because that was your choice.
Yeah, it's interesting to see where this is going to go because, you know, like most people know, you can buy one of those like boxes on Amazon now too, right? Like you just stream everything, right? You pay, I don't know how much it is, like a few hundred bucks, and then literally any Netflix show, any HBO show, anything, whatever, UFC, whatever, you can watch it there too. So it'll be an interesting transition. Like, you know, I don't do that because I like to pay for things that I like. Like recently I've been rewatching that, HBO show Barry. Man, amazing show. Super amazing show, right? So it's like I would feel bad not paying for that. Like if I don't pay for that, that means that's me saying I don't want any more of this, you know. Yeah. So it'll be interesting when, you know, things will actually get, you know, you'll actually make money on your content if people actually see the value of it and say, okay, I need to pay for this because I want to see more. You know, so we're trending in that direction. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Go ahead, Avi.
I was just going to say, I want to, given the absurd prices and the, I mean, we are being gouged at this point, right? By these streaming providers. And now they're inserting advertisements. And like you pointed out, QW, shrinkflation, you can't even share your password with family members.
The drones will be flying over our house soon.
They're in New Jersey right now. I would say let's bring back good old-fashioned piracy, but with a value for value twist, right? On Nostr. Let's start pirate. When I say let's, I mean someone ought to.
Right? Those are corn memes. They're everywhere.
Someone ought to pirate the good content. Stream it on one of these Nostr streaming services, and if people like it, they just zap it. That's, and it goes to the content creator.
We'll call it Napster. What do you think?
SDR, yeah, love it.
Anyways, so yeah, paying for access, since we're on the topic, I've never actually paid for a film, to watch a film with Sats. That was freaking awesome. And I love the fact that you like every good Bitcoin vendor out there, say, discount for Sats. Obviously, it's not a discount in the long game, but that's the best way to approach it. So it was number one. That was a beautiful moment, paying with Lightning and sending the Sats right from my Primal wallet. So straight from a Nostr base to an outside source there. But what's the methodology? Paying for that, number one, paying for the Sats. Obviously, I know that. But I noticed there's 3 logins for 7 days. So essentially, the way, if anybody's listening, you say, oh, I want to purchase this. It says $9.99 on the site, but then you go to checkout and it has this Lightning option, which gives you the discount. Once you pay for that, then I get an email that has the link and a password. So basically I just click the link and then I put the password in. I suppose that'd be one login, correct?
Right, exactly.
And so you have 7 days to essentially log in 3 times. So me, I can watch it 100 times on the first login. Well, you know, whatever the number would be, but I can continue to watch it. And then the next login would be a separate device or separate IP or separate desktop or whatever.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So that was kind of, I mean, I can make those numbers whatever I want, right? The days and the usages, but that seemed kind of like, and everybody's been happy with it so far, but the idea is, yeah, you're kind of renting it. And what that does is, one, it allows you to access it now and watch it now, but it also allows me to, continue to try to find a home for it on a big platform. So Netflix, HBO, these kinds of things. And so nothing official, no official conversations happening there. But, part of this release and having more Bitcoiners watch it and getting the word out there is, to see what doors are there and connections are there that I'm not aware of. There must be Bitcoiners working at some of these platforms or know somebody that works at one of these platforms. I recently also just submitted the first half of the film to Angel Studios. So Angel Studios is really the only platform that has a formal process where, if you've never worked with them before, you can submit the film there, and then everything and anything that they put on their platform has to go through their guild. That's like their yep, paying community, and they vote on it. And so I had submitted like a 20-minute cut before. It wasn't as polished. And that 20-minute cut was like half about inflation and half about Bitcoin. But the transition into Bitcoin wasn't so great. So it came across more of like a Bitcoin advertisement or almost like a propaganda type of thing. And so that did okay, but it didn't quite pass their score. So this time around, only the first half of the film is being shown for now. And that's all inflation related. So I don't see why that wouldn't just fly. Go by with flying colors. And then once that goes through, then they'll actually put the full film on there. And that'll be the real test to see if, at least their guild is ready for a Bitcoin related film, or if they're going to, they kind of have a pushback on it. But anyways, sorry, the question was about
to talk about the momentum on their guild. So Tuttle Twins, obviously anybody that knows Angel Network and Tuttle Twins, they just released their second Bitcoin episode. So they're in season 3. But if you understand the methodology, the way Tuttle Twins actually does their seasons, they have all these episode ideas, and then the guild votes on what they like. So just like you said, with your documentary, these are specific episodes too that this guild is voting on. So season 3, they just voted, and it's already been presented, or actually already, it's already live. But it was the Bitcoin Beach. It was kind of like I think it was El Salvador based Bitcoin Beach.
I saw the premiere in LA. They premiered it in LA at some event, and it was
awesome. That's got to make you feel bullish on possibly getting a chance, especially with the inflation monster episode and being so popular.
Yeah, I think they're laying the groundwork, and I think it's, again, I think that's what's so, I think it's just a matter of time before this ends up somewhere big, because, inflation isn't going anywhere. Bitcoin isn't going anywhere. Like Tim Pool, if you're familiar with him, just had Jack Maulers and today had Jack Maulers and Ben Askren and Ben Workman, all 3 Bitcoiners on to talk about Bitcoin. And so, yeah, I think it's just, it's going to be more and more out there. And it's really just a matter of time, because I don't know of another film that really simply and emotionally explains inflation and why it's happening and what it looks like around the world and what it's paying for. And also, I can't think of another one that does the same thing for Bitcoin. So in my mind, you know, I produced what I think is like the most concentrated hour of, you know, inflation and Bitcoin content. And, you know, and I'm hoping that that really, like, people have been congratulating me, you know, watching the film. And I really feel like just half the battle is done. The real goal is to get the masses to see it. And that way you guys are having people, like you were saying earlier, QW, hitting you up, saying like, hey, you know, I just saw this film, No More Inflation, and like, I know you've been trying to tell me about Bitcoin, and I want to learn more now. You know, I think that's when my job is done. That's when you can tell me congratulations. And so, so I think it's just a matter of time, you know. And I don't know of any other piece of work out there like this. And, you know, hopefully we trip more people down the rabbit hole, and, you know, they can come out at the other end, Bitcoiners just like you and I, you know, and this is just the first starting point for them. And then they can listen to PlebChain Radio. They can read, you know, Avi's book. They can read other books. They can listen to other podcasts. So, yeah, that's the goal, man.
There is something to be said, though, Shooter. Because, I mean, this is a lot of work, right? Just having to go to these skeptics at Netflix, at HBO, at Angel Network, right? It sounds like they're not exactly embracing Bitcoin with open arms. There actually is a process. There is something to be said for Bitcoin, as especially now we're in NGU season, and who knows where we're headed, right? Maybe back to 58K. But
when you say NGU season, you mean inflation season, right, Avi? Yeah.
Well, deflation. Our purchasing power is increasing quite a bit. But let's say it goes to a million, right? In the next year or two, there will be plebs who, at that point, might be able to step up and say, you know what? Screw this. We're building a parallel system. We have the capital now to build our own content distribution network. Right, screw all of these guys who are skeptical and you know who think we're terrorists or whatever, drug dealers or whatever it is. Right, we're just going to do it ourselves. So, I don't know if you've ever thought along those lines, Shooter, that you know one day in the not too distant future, Bitcoiners will have this parallel infrastructure that's as well capitalized and potentially tentacles can reach as far as the existing legacy systems today.
I think so, especially if, but I think like the hardest part is getting that initial user base, right? Because again, like a very small percentage of the world is actually passionate about Bitcoin, right? So that's kind of the problem, right? And that's really why I focused on inflation too, is that I wanted it to be applicable to just anybody generally. So, yeah, I can see that happening. I don't know exactly how it happens. You know, again, like, let's say like someone like a Jack Dorsey saw my film and was like, okay, we need to make sure everybody is going to see this. So what I'm going to do is, you know, I'm going to invest $1 million into advertising it across different platforms. Or, I mean, you know, I don't have too much experience like marketing a film to the masses like that. That's what Angel Studios does, right? And so, yeah, maybe it's something like that, where someone sees an opportunity to build a platform, a Bitcoin platform, and to, you know, do it on the back of like a few like cornerstone pieces. You know, maybe it's my film, maybe it's Dirty Coin, maybe it's, you know, some other things that are very entertaining and that can kind of, you know, be used to push out and to get people on board. But again, I think the biggest thing is just that it's difficult, right? You're competing with major networks that already have massive audiences, and you know, people are already kind of like being careful with where they spend their money and how many subscriptions they have. And so I think that would be nice if a Bitcoin platform popped up, but I think probably what's going to happen is one of these platforms is going to smarten up, like HBO or Amazon or Angel Studios probably, and is really going to embrace it, and they're going to kind of become like that Bitcoin platform. You know, they're going to use the momentum that they already have, and they're going to kind of, you know, seize the opportunity. But who knows? I don't know how it's going to go down.
Jack, if you're listening, which I'm certain you are, you heard what
he's, he's the guest. He's the guest down
he
there.
He is the guest. QW, we know that Jack has a lot of money because he doesn't spend money on shirts. He just has one. It's the one Satoshi shirt.
Mm-hmm. He's got a cameo in my film too. You know, I shot a little bit of him.
I saw it. Yeah. My good friend, local pleb, Sam with Lightning Store. He knows exactly how many shirts Jack has bought. But I won't let the truth get in the way of a good story. He only has one shirt, Avi.
So what was some of the high points, Shooter, in as you filmed?
Oh, Graham Hancock, obviously. Never imagined I would be interviewing him. Everyone is just different, right? Everybody has a unique energy and a unique flavor. And there's so much information. Like, even like the interviews I have, I plan on releasing extended interviews because like your wife and I had a really great conversation and we talked about all kinds of things. And, you know, in the end, I think she probably only like has like 25 seconds, you know, in the film. But that's how it goes, you know? And so, your wife and I talked about some very deep things. And like, at the time I was staying in like on the top floor in Riga, where you have to walk up all these stairs, right? So we had to walk up, and then they both had to like take a break and drink some water before we started. And so, lots of things like that. But to be honest with you, the best part of it all so far has been it being done. I just feel like I'm at peace. You know, like I feel like any creative person, you have this desire to want to express yourself, you know, and it's part of the reason why maybe people don't like doing their fiat jobs, because they feel like, you know, I'm kind of wasting my time and my energy and my talent. And, this was really a blessing for me to be able to spend 2 years with total creative control and freedom. You know, it's like a musical artist, you know, let's say, you know, you make music and someone's like, hey, I'm going to give you 2 years to make the best album you can possibly make, you know, and then you make it and then it comes out like you envisioned it, you know, and to yourself, you believe it to be great. There's no better feeling than that. So I think that's really been, you know, of course, traveling around, I saw so many places for the first time, you know, again, like Kenya and on safari, and just met so many friends like all over the world now, man. It's so cool. But I think just having it all done, completing it, actually doing it, and it like, you know, coming in reality to be, you know, what I envisioned it, is just so rewarding and so fulfilling. It's like, it's really, you know, put me at peace. And I feel like I'm ready for whatever comes next, you know, whether it's a massive thing that gets picked up on a platform, or, you know, it's, you know, or whatever, or just even the people it's already touched now, it's enough. Like I feel so good, man. I never felt this content in my entire life. So, yeah.
Well, that's, well, I'd love to hear that, Shooter. And by the way, every time you say people in, well, you only said it the first time, but every time I hear someone say people in fiat jobs that they don't particularly care about because their lives are wasting away, I take a deep sigh, because that's exactly what's happening to me. Well, that's how I feel every now and then anyway.
PCR is a full-time job. Come on, man.
Value for value. Yeah, that's right.
I felt the same way too, Avi, you know. And again, like, if it's very possible that I will go back to doing, you know, fiat jobs after this, depending on how all this stuff works out. But like, I've never been more content to do it, because, you know, it's a sacrifice to work on something like this for 2 years. And ultimately what I want most, just like in my film I mentioned, is to have a family. And I can do that with my fiat work. And I don't know if I can do that in Bitcoin. but it's worth it for me. You know, like, again, it's giving me that peace to be like, if that's what I have to do to have a family and to save for the future, I'm totally okay with doing it, because I felt like I did the best I could possibly do. Like, I expressed myself to my fullest. And if the universe doesn't want me to continue doing that, I'm okay with it. Like, I am at peace, man. So I feel you. I understand how you must be feeling.
Yeah, no, but on the flip side, Shooter, just hearing you explain it that way, how you're feeling and the stage you're at, it's truly inspiring. I don't know, QW, it's I don't know if you felt the same way, but that was really nice to hear someone in you know, completing this labor of love over a 2-year period, and feeling the way they're feeling, the sense of completion and satisfaction that they have at the end of that. Love to hear it.
Well, and that's it too. I mean, that's what proof of work does. That's the taking your time, taking the low time preference approach, and making sure you're dotting the I's and crossing the T's. And you know, I think the last time we spoke, he had a few more interviews to do. He kind of had his plan in order to kind of finalize the vision that he had. So I think as a director of something like this, you know, when you've kind of finally pressed that send button, it's you've thought about pressing that send button 100 times already. And so when you finally do, you know, there's nothing more you can do, and it's in the hands of everyone else now. And you got to be proud of your Michelangelo approach.
Yeah, man. Like, literally, I felt tension like release like over the couple of days after I put the film out. Like, I realized when I had put it out and it was out there in the wild, like, I was like, man, I still feel physically like I'm like still grinding through the thing, you know? And I would remind myself like, dude, it's done, you know? And I kind of like, oh, relax a little bit. And then like after a couple of days, I was like, oh man, I literally feel a weight lifted off of me. And yeah, it's a great feeling, man. Thank you guys.
Did you,
you wrote a book, you press send.
I did. I was actually going to bring, I mean, obviously I think Shooter's work involved a lot more travel and a lot more physical labor, right? Just holding that camera up is exhausting for such a long period of time. So I'm sure his dominant hands, biceps must be absolutely shredded. Not so sure about the other side.
We're praying for the other side.
Yeah. But I will say, Shooter, I mean, my book took 1.5 years for me to write as well, right? And it was a, you know, not a small book, 150,000 words, 400 plus pages. And I felt similarly when I hit submit, right, on the final draft, and it was gone. But I also felt empty. I was like, wait, this took up my mind space for 1.5 years. And now, what do I do now? Right, like it did give me, Shooter, is it gave me a beautiful refuge from my fiat life that I didn't have to think in those moments when I was writing and flowing through the book. It just gave me escape from the fact that I was working for a worthless corporation, and all my labor would do was bump their stock price, best case scenario, right? That was nice, right? And that suddenly, once I've hit send, that refuge was gone, right? And this labor of love, well, there was nothing left to do. I don't know if you feel that same sense of emptiness.
I did. I know what you mean, because like, literally, you know, all my thoughts would be, you know, absorbed by this project. I mean, if I wasn't working on it or planning on it, I was thinking about it. I mean, I was dreaming about it, you know? But I think maybe our situation was a little bit different, because I'm not sure if while you were writing the book, you were probably working the same fiat stuff you were doing. I was doing very little of that. Like, it was literally like almost 100, you know, I almost had 100% of my time to doing the film. And so, you know, I think maybe since I've had that disconnect from the fiat work, then, you know, I understand the emptiness, because again, the film took up so much. But at the same time, for me, like, I'm done with it, man. Like, I've seen the film like 5,000 times. You know what I mean? Like, I know every line of the film. You know what I mean? Like, I know everyone's voice very well, you know? And so I think for me, since it was 100% of my focus for the last 2 years, there was also some relief in feeling like, yes, there is like an emptiness, but I'm happy to have the fucking emptiness because it's been full for so long that I'm just kind of like, my mind needs a break, you know what I mean? And so, but I understand what you mean.
So, Shuto, you mentioned there are going to be several, or there were several interviews that obviously you could only take a few minutes or a few seconds of. Does that mean there's going to be some kind of outtake reel or something along those lines in the near future?
Yeah, so on my YouTube channel, there's already a few extended interviews. There's Rockstar Dev, there's Graham Hancock, and there's this woman from South Sudan who didn't make the film at all. And so, yeah, I think there'll be more like this. We'll eventually, I'll get through the interviews and I'll cut like, you know, between, you know, 5 and 20 minute versions of these interviews. That way people can, because there's, again, there's stories within all of this stuff, like, you know, HT, Huddle Tarantula, and Mitch up in North Dakota. Like, they really talk about like the brotherhood that it takes out there to be safe and to work on these types of jobs and the danger that they put themselves in, and they know that they're doing that and they know they're making a sacrifice. And a lot of it's due to Bitcoin because they understand they're contributing to this network that is really, really, really important for human beings, and that they likely wouldn't be out there sacrificing, you know, 6 months of the year if Bitcoin didn't exist. So there's lots of little nuanced stories like that. And so, yeah, definitely throughout time, I'll be, you know, releasing those and yeah, making them available for people to see.
You know, and coming back to one of the plot elements, if you will, I mean, it's hard to say plot in a documentary, but I did notice that the narrator, meaning yourself, had a character arc in the movie, right? It's you start with you're playing this person who's like, well, can I have a family? You know, there's all this inflation, and you're playing this character who learns about. Like, oh, wait a second, there is hope. I thought there wasn't hope, but now there actually is hope. Now, obviously, that's you playing a part, right, Shooter? You are a long-time Bitcoiner. Why did you go with that sort of storytelling device?
So yeah, the film before it, like before the final version, didn't really have a narrator. I wasn't sure if I was going to do the narration or not. But I felt like the narration just helped kind of tie it all together and helped remind the viewer how these things interrelate with each other. And also, you know, I wanted to interview regular people for the film because I knew that my audience for the film was going to be regular people. And so, yeah, I thought at the end, you know, my story is really in line with a lot of people out there today in lots of different countries, you know. And so I just felt like you were saying, having a story arc of the narrator would really connect with a lot of people. And a lot of people are feeling the same way. I mean, I met so many people that don't have any kids because, you know, they're financially worried about being able to take care of them. And then, of course, there's people that have one kid that wish they could have two, but, you know, again, they're worried about financially taking care of them. And so it just seemed like just a great universal, like, tortilla to kind of wrap it all in, you know. And also it was an opportunity for me to lay out my why I was making the film, right? Because some people I could see maybe speculating like, oh, this dude's just trying to pump his bags and it's just like a Bitcoin advertisement, you know. And yeah, I wanted to make it clear that look, I'm just doing this to share stories, you know, like this is my story. This is what I'm going through. This is how these people have helped me. And I just want to share these people with you because, you know, maybe it'll help you too. So, yeah, it just seemed like a natural way to really wrap up the whole film, to give it, you know, make it easy for people to follow along and to maybe resonate with, you know, more of the younger generation that is likely feeling the exact same pains that, you know, I was feeling.
I could agree. I mean, my son's almost, he's going to be two, coming up on two. And I kind of crossed that mental bridge. I mean, just look at my profile pick there, Shooter. My son, it's a big warrior with a little warrior, but a little warrior is holding the shield, and that shield is the Bitcoin B. So that Bitcoin is going to shield his future. If we're going to do it, if that's an analogy for you, but that it just gives me peace of mind that there is hope. And I think anybody that dives into Bitcoin and fully grasps that it's not just a store of value, it's a way of life. It's a way of seeing the future differently with this. There's a reason a lot of plebs love family, love popping out children. Generation B is promising, and I think that taking that narration approach is impactful, and something that I think the world is at odds now with the price of everything. How can you, if I can barely afford my life, how do I afford another's, let alone one that absolutely requires my attention, time, and then finances. So that's the big two. And I think it all comes down to time as well. So you had the option on your website to view right now, purchase in fiat or purchase in sats or, Bitcoin. What are you seeing as far as the percentage are you seeing as far as fiat to Bitcoin?
Yeah, I can probably actually look at it exactly right now, but it's probably like 95% Bitcoin and, 5% fiat, and probably mostly because most.
So it's going to be the highest grossing film ever.
Yeah,
over time.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You heard it here first, Avi.
That's hilarious. For sure it will be, man. That's so funny, dude. It'll probably be the highest costing film too of all time. A lot of the money I raised was raised in Bitcoin. So
Tell me you didn't go to a steak with Avi.
A steak.
Yeah, he's known for his expensive overtime steaks.
Well, they pay off for me. I don't know what you're talking about, yeah. CW. Because I pay in fiat and I collect in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I should have timestamped that. We need to find that transaction. It's going to be the Bitcoin pizza in 10 years.
I think Bitcoin was around 39K or something.
I guess we can timestamp it to last November.
Yeah.
So that's, we'll have to keep that. Well, actually, don't destroy it. I don't want to think about it. So about 90%.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I'm everything's done through Zaprite, so I'm trying to see if I can actually get a clear. Based on this homepage, it's looking like it's closer to like 60-40, like 60% Lightning and 40% fiat. But I'll have to dig a little deeper.
There is a bridge you cross. I mean, when you're like, well, do I want to burn my fiat? Versus do I want to support a circular economy and spend sats? Obviously, we all think sats are precious, but at the same time, you're like, I like to burn fiat too.
Right. And I think in the US, go ahead, Avi.
No, go ahead, Shuto.
I think in the US too, like there's not very many great Lightning wallets either. So that might be an issue.
Anybody listening, my Primal wallet worked like a gem.
There you go. Yeah, but to me, like fiat, like dollars and sats are the same fucking thing. Like,
exactly.
I'm gonna spend dollars. Like, it's the same thing. Might as well use the Bitcoin rails.
Right. I mean, it's the people who say, well, I'm not going to spend my Bitcoin, I'm going to spend fiat. Instead, you could have used the fiat to spend to buy Bitcoin, right? So what?
I said burn fiat, not spend. You burn it. And my son is pounding again. Here he comes.
He's sick of hearing fiat so much.
So Shooter, is this movie going to be submitted to the Bitcoin Film Fest 2025 early Golden Rabbit contender?
Yeah, so actually, I did a podcast yesterday, and Tomek joined us. So, yeah, I don't think I'll be able to attend. I mean, I'm gonna see what I'm gonna do about conferences because I was doing so many this last year for filming purposes and also for raising money to help make the get the film done. But without doing that, it's like it's difficult to justify going to the conferences because like I mean, even if like let's say one event wanted to like actually pay for my travel, it's like the opportunity cost of like not working for that week or whatever is also there too. And after 2 years of working on this, kind of like I got to get back to the grind. So anyway, yeah, I'm totally down to have them screen it there and all that good stuff. I'm just not sure about actually being able to attend it myself.
And what do you have in the crosshairs? What's next for you as you try to focus your time? And I think last episode you were had aspirations of possibly homesteading and having a family out in a rural area. Tell me
Yeah,
what's next.
that's the ultimate goal. Yeah, that'll have to be balanced with like, staying close to family too. When I have kids, like it'd be nice to be around my parents and my mom and stuff, and same for my lady. And so we'll have to balance that. But yeah, that's ultimately like, I want to be as self-sovereign as possible, and I want to always like have my food secured. So at a minimum, I want to live close to, cattle ranchers. I want to live next to the cows, if not have some myself. That way, I just tick that box and I'm not ever, worried about food for myself. So yeah, that's the goal. So family for sure. And again, that depends on work. So we'll see how it goes. Best case scenario, this film is, spread far and wide and it's successful and, there's an opportunity to do another one and I can spend the next couple of years making another one and also, have family. But if not, then yeah, just back to, doing what I was doing before and doing fiat work and, yeah, and finally raising the family.
Say so raring to go, Shooter. The last time you were here, you were like, I'm gonna fall off the map. I don't think I can do anything after this. Now you're like, the second movie comes around. Why not? I can. You're itching to get back in the game, my friend.
Well, I mean, I'm not against it. Like I guess naively, I was thinking that if the film would kind of, speak for itself, and I wouldn't have to promote the thing, and kind of like maybe there'd be a connection made to a big platform, and I wouldn't necessarily have to like be out there. But seems like that's not the case, and so then I kind of had this crossroad where it was like, okay, well. Do I want to, like disappear and not give the film a full chance and myself, my future self, a full chance at actually being able to do this? Or do I want to, take on whatever the risk is associated with being more public, with going out there and talking about it? And the reward of that would be potentially continuing to do this. And so, yeah, we'll just have to see how it goes. We'll have to see how it goes. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, if some crazy reason, like, I came across a bunch of Bitcoin or this film was wildly successful and I made a bunch of money doing it and I was sitting on a big stack of Bitcoin, and maybe I wouldn't be chomping at the bit to do another one yet. Maybe I would disappear for a little bit. But yeah, we'll just have to see how it all plays out.
Well, I am already looking forward to the next Shooter movie. I'm sure this one will. It's inevitable, Shooter. Bitcoin's just coming into the public crosshairs now, right? I mean, with all the movement around it, 100K. I mean, it's going to be 200K in the not too distant future, and then 1 million in the not too distant future as well. Each landmark, each milestone will bring more people in, and this is going to act as a valuable resource. And then there'll be a lot of demand for the next Shooter movie. There certainly is on this show already. So, hey man, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time. True labor of love that you've created over 2 years. I can only imagine how you must feel to have it out in the wild, have people watch it, have them talk about how much they love what you created. I certainly did. I'm sure I can speak for QW as well. My wife, Monica, loved it. I know she reached out to you after we watched it a couple of days back. So it's truly appreciate what you've done with this movie. Keep doing what you're doing. Please don't disappear. We want you around, Shooter. I want to see you at the next conference. Hopefully it's Warsaw, right, for the Bitcoin Film Fest. Maybe something earlier. But yeah, thank you for coming again, man. And I'm sure we'll have you back soon at some point.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys, man. And everyone's been thanking me for, you know, making the film. And, you know, I want to thank you guys too. I know the dedication and consistency it requires to continue doing, you know, the Pleb Chain Radio. And so, yeah, you guys keep it up too. We're all necessary for, you know, the world to start to come into Bitcoin. So the same way you appreciate me, I appreciate you right back, man. So thank you for having me, and thank you for giving me your time too.
Culture is upstream of adoption, Avi. That's, and we're all doing our part for it. And anybody listening, please check out No More Inflation at nomoreinflation.com. Support value for value. If you like the show, go on to Noster, Zap Shooter as well. Zap our show on Fountain, whatever it is, get involved, be part of the culture, find ways that you can contribute. We all are cogs in this wheel. The change is worth it. And, you know, I think a movie like No More Inflation is a perfect example of how much it's worth it to get involved. So with that said, we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.